By the way, this is not my daughter. She was here yesterday. This is her daughter. And this is Mariah. She's a Mariah English. She's a senior at ACU, graduating in midterm. And she was taking care of our tech. She had about three jobs going at once yesterday, and she got it solved anyway. But she's got it fixed up this morning. And thank you, Mariah. And she's the light of my life. I've got 10 grandkids. Could you believe that?
Yes.
And now we have 6 great-grandkids, too. And some grandsons-in-law. They're great, too. Well, are you ready to start?
Yes.
How many of you are new this morning to the class? Okay, we'll do a little review, and then we'll get into the stuff I had in mind for this morning. The psalmist said, Lord, do not rebuke me in your anger or discipline me in your wrath. For your arrows have pierced me, and your hand has come down upon me. Because of your wrath, there's no health in my body. My bones have no soundness because of my sins. My guilt overwhelms me like a burden too heavy to bear. My wounds fester and are loathsome because of my sinful folly. I'm bowed down and brought very low all day long. I go about mourning. My back, filled with searing pain. There's no health in my body. I'm feeble and utterly crushed, and I groan in anguish of heart. My heart pounds, my strength fails me, even the light is gone from my eyes. My friends and companions avoid me because of my wounds, and my neighbors stay far away, and those who seek my life set their traps. Those who would harm me talk of my ruin all day long. They talk of deception. I'm like a deaf man who cannot hear, like a mute who cannot speak. I become like a man who can't hear and can't open his mouth. I wait for you, O Lord. You will answer, O Lord my God, for I said, do not let them gloat or exalt themselves over me when my foot slips, for I'm about to fall, and my pain is ever with me. O Lord, do not depart from me. Please be near me, O my God. Come near and help me, O Lord, my Savior. 38th Psalm. One of the two psalms that really doesn't end with a positive note. The other one is Psalm 88. And some of you remember, it starts bad, gets worse, gets terrible. And the last line says, darkness is my only friend. Anybody in here ever felt like some of these psalms? I think most of us have at some point. And those who have experienced the loss of a child or a mate or even a beloved career or have been attacked by friends or betrayed by them or have experienced some debilitating disease or chronic pain. Those are familiar psalms. And they're placed there because God knows how we feel. He doesn't necessarily say that needs to be how we spend our lives feeling sorry for ourselves. But he does welcome our honest expressions of hopelessness and even of anger at him. So for that, I love the Psalms. And let me tell those of you who are new here today why. Yesterday we thumbnailed first. Carolyn was supposed to teach this with me, but she is at home probably reading that song today with pretty serious back pain, waiting for the reports of a MRI this morning. But she's not able to be here. But we told our story. I was born in Canada, went to school at Fried Harlan College, a long way from home, and back in Henderson, Tennessee, and that's where I met my wife, Carol. Fell in love with her before I knew her name. We married at the end of my time at Fried Harlan, and then we went the next year to Harding, Searcy. While there, our first child was born when I was a senior, Michelle, who was helping teach the class yesterday. After finishing at Searcy in 59, I went to Harding Graduate School. Carolyn worked and took care of the baby, and I went to school. At the end of that school year, we went back to Canada, where I planned to go, to British Columbia, back in the Rocky Mountains, started a little church there, and we were there for almost 5 years. And that's where our next daughter was born, Debbie, and our son, John. Then we went back to Hardingrad for a year, and I preached at a little town near there. These were a lot of moves for our family, and a long way from home, and some lonely years, and not always the easiest years, but a lot of ways wonderful. And I went back and finished the master's, and then went and took a group to help plant a church in Kelowna, British Columbia, about 70 miles from where we'd been before, again in the mountains. After 5 years there, we didn't feel designed for that work. We asked God to take us somewhere, anywhere but in the United States in an established church. And so a few months later, we wound up at the Highland Church in Abilene, Texas, where we stayed for almost 20 years. By the way, we had a fourth child born, a second son, in Kelowna. He was a year old when we moved to Abilene. Yeah, there with wonderful years with the Highland Church, and elders took me a raise. I got fired once for a week, rehired a week later. That's unusual, you know. Then I finished my doctorate when I was there. I taught adjunct classes for most of the time we were in Abilene, first in the missions department in Harding, and graduate school. Graduate courses in ministry. And toward the end of that time, because that's a visible church, we had a lot of students who came, as still happens. They'd be there Sunday. And so when they would leave here, they'd become leaders in churches and business, whatever work they went eventually. But their formative years, and I can see some of you sitting here that were part of that action. One just got back from Coastal. And those people would be calling to us for encouragement and help and guidance in their ministry. And so some of the elders and I would go. And gradually it got to where my heart was really in that. And I felt like Highland needed fresh blood. I was coasting there and loving this. So we resigned in 1990. Spent a year trying to get together what a little organization we wanted to call our Hope Network. We traffic in Hope, designed to help elders and ministers get what you can't get in an academic setting on site. And we did this with little groups of mentoring groups of 10 to 14 persons, some of them all ministers, some of them all elders, some of the elders and staff of the church, all over the country, some in other countries, and dozens of those groups, hundreds of people went through them. And we did that for almost 17 years, and then I was diagnosed 5 years ago, last June, with, they were going to do a little surgery on my neck because some joints, some vertebrae, they were messed up. And when they did the x-ray, they spotted something on my lung. Then the next day, the oncologist told me, "Sir, you have adenocarcinoma." Well, I haven't been to any medical school. I do Latin well, so I don't know what the word means. He said that means lung cancer, stage 2B, right lung, the kind non-smokers get, only non-smokers get. So one of my doctors asked him how long that, what that mean in terms of prognosis, and he was a little afraid to say it. Finally he said, well, everything goes right, you could be alive as well, maybe 50% chance of being alive a couple of years from now, which didn't seem like good odds for me. But a person came up to me yesterday, told me he had been, had three rounds of chemo, three times of blood cancer. What's the word I'm looking for? My mind's not awake yet. Yes, leukemia. And he's the only person still alive that's experienced what he has. He's been in remission 16 years now. So what I had was minor. Someone else was showing me a half-paralyzed body from being hit by a car who could not walk for years. Now drove her car here from Oklahoma City. So there are many, many ways to suffer worse, but it was the biggest shock we ever got. We had been trying to minister to people who were suffering and hurting and dying for 45 years or so. 60 years of ministry yesterday for me, or last, in September. And I would say words to them, but I had no clue what they really felt. As Rabbi Abraham Heschel said, the man who has not suffered, what does he know anyway? Well, it was a shock. I had to face my own mortality. Carolyn had had 5 years of virtual house arrest and slavery. The caregiver quite often in situations like this, or any other kind of heavy situation, often bears a heavier burden, even if their spouse is under a terrible emotional stress. It's painful. It's still awfully hard on the spot. So it's been a journey, and there were weeks where I couldn't get out of bed, couldn't eat, couldn't bathe, couldn't shave, you couldn't rest. Then I got where I could walk a little, but I didn't walk much. Chemotherapy, 3 months, and then 3 more months, rest of chemotherapy, radiation, urine radiation, pneumonia. And there were times I had to face myself, and the Psalms meant a lot. I often recited Psalm 13 in the middle of the night, how long, O Lord, how long will it be this way forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and every day have sorrow in my heart? How long will this enemy triumph over me? Look on me and answer, O Lord my God. Give light to my eyes or I'll sleep in death. And my enemies will say, I've overcome him, and my foes will rejoice when I fall. But somehow I began to pray the last half of that song. But I trust in your unfailing love, and my heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing to the Lord, for he has been good to me. I say that because I wouldn't want to go back there again. So I don't want to put Carolyn through that again. But I thank God every day that he gave, we knew, that he gave us the privilege to walk through that experience because of what he's teaching us. He taught me that I'm an adulterer. And the worst part of it was, I was the God. Many ministers are witches, brews of narcissism and insecurity, and I was Exhibit A, am Exhibit A, recovering hopefully. And of course, being an affirmation junkie, whatever you can use, get love and get attention, and I want people to think I'm a better man than I am and smarter. And so I worked hard at creating a false persona that fooled so many people, and that's the hideous part of it, even my family to some extent. except for God, and he never let up. Stripped me naked. But he also taught me how powerless I am. Part of my adultery is how power can fix anything. And here, I can't even earn my own living. I can't secure my future financially. I don't know how to do anything that people will want me to do enough to pay me enough salary to live on anymore. Fortunately, somehow God graced us with a retirement fund that will take care of us. Unless a teenage hacker takes it away, then God will take care of us anyway. But that was a good thing to learn. We are in control of nothing. And what happened in the Garden of Eden was, we want control. And so we pick the no apples. I also learned that I can't stop suffering. Can't fix it. Can't find any doctors that fix all of it, and you have neuropathy, and you have two-thirds of your left and right lung missing. When you have no balance, hurt a lot, you either accept it as something God can use to refine you in some way that you don't know, or you let it sweep over you and engulf you. And, you know, a lot of us who've gone through stuff like that go through our engulfment moments. But I've decided it must be a little like Paul's thorn in the flesh. Grace is sufficient. I learned that I can't stop death either. And it doesn't really matter to me that much anymore. I don't realize which might have to go through to get from here to there, you know. But I had a wonderful life, having the best life I've ever had right now. Carolyn would say the same. We love each other more, kids more, the people we have known for years more precious to us. The green grass and the flowers and the birds of the air are sweeter than ever. Dawn is golden, dusk is precious, and God is present. And I learned I can't make myself significant. I can't dress myself up enough to be significant. I can't embellish my persona or my diploma or my resume enough to be significant. Only significance we have is in God. And man, are we precious to him. I mean, you couldn't give me enough flaws to fill the empty place in my heart that only God can fill. I'm too narcissistic and insecure for that. So we've learned some things we need to learn. Let me rephrase that. We're learning some things we need to be learning. And obviously, I'm in remission now for several years. If I hit February, it'll be the magic 5 years. But I'm going to die of something else someday. And even if I die of cancer, I've been healed in a lot of things. One of the biggest is I've been healed of what Peter said is all our lifetime being held in bondage under fear of death. But what we are learning through this, and God is teaching us, we want to share with you some of it. So we want to talk a little bit today about some of the things that hurt us, that don't help us during this time, some of which are very well meant. Are you ready to go there? Anybody have any questions about where we've come so far? Now, here I want you to get your pencil out and start writing down questions you want to ask here in about 5 minutes. I'm not reading that clock right. What does it say?
10 of 9.
How much?
10 of 9.
8:50. 8:50, 10 of 9.
It's 8:50?
8:50.
So we've got 25 minutes left. Okay, that was perfect. Dr. Caroline, I want to ask you to tell me when to get to 5 minutes. Okay, if you can't stand on the screen or sing one of the things on Hosea's song, Jesus. Okay, one of the words that I want to talk about a few things that we do to ourselves that are not helpful. And one of these is blame. You know, one of the first thoughts is, I never did ask God, why did you do this to me? Why me? Because we couldn't think of any logical reason we should be exempt from suffering that everybody else suffers. But why suffer? And, you know, you remember the time that some of the disciples came to Jesus and said, how come this guy's blind? Was it his sin or his parents? Well, that old heresy has been floating around for centuries and still infects us. And God doesn't like that idea. And Jesus said, it's not about who sinned. In fact, it's about how God can be revealed through this. But, you know, we tend to think, man, if I had been a smoker, I'd know why I had lung cancer, right? If I had been an alcoholic or something, I know that does to my body. If I had, you know, whatever I'd done to myself, I would know that I had a contributing factor. I couldn't think of a contributing factor. Many of you can. Somebody hits you with a car, there's no contributing factor except that you happen to be where that car was going. And then another one is maybe God is testing me and making me do extra work here to earn something from Him. Earn affirmation, respect. Earn credibility. Earn what I don't deserve to have. And the fact that I don't deserve to have anything. And no, you don't either. I remember one time I was traveling through Israel with Joseph Shulam, planted churches all over Israel. Joseph did it. We were going past the place where Uzzah was said to have died. You know, when he touched the ark and God zapped him. And I said, hey, Joe, how come God zapped us just for touching that ark? I wanted to hear his Jewish answer. And Shulam says, Brother Lynn, this is an inappropriate question. We do not ask God why God does anything. God is God. If you want to ask an appropriate question, it should not be, why did Uzzah get zapped? But how come the rest of us got off? We all deserve to die. No. All is by God's grace. The next time you feel air come into your lungs, it's a gift of God's grace. Take your pulse. Every beat of your heart is a gift of God's grace. Every joy of your life and your life itself and mine. So that's just bad, and it hurts because then you start thinking you can earn your way out of it. In fact, I've become a little uncomfortable with the term cancer survivor. It sounds like somehow this was an achievement on my part. I fought and won. You can't fight this stuff. And a lot of people fought a lot harder than I do, lost. So it's by grace, everything is by grace. And the other idea is, to quote again from a book that was written by a man named Smith, Good and Glorious God. He said, and the other idea is built on century-old narrative that God is an angry judge, and if you do well, you'll be blessed, and if you sin, you will be punished. You will be punished. One other idea is the idea that we think that God owes us. I remember being in a prayer group one time and a four-year-old child was dying with leukemia. And one of his aunts began to weep and say, God, you owe us. We have been a righteous family. Why does this little boy suffer? My heart was broken for her feelings. But the facts are, God doesn't owe us. And it's a sense in which, yes, we are enormously indebted to him. But he doesn't want us to pay back debts. He wants us to know him and be known by him. He wants a relationship with us. The prodigal sons, and I say sons, were loved by a prodigal father. Prodigal means excessive. And the younger son was excessive in his desire to get what he wanted, which was freedom. And the older son was obsessive to get what he wanted, which was his inheritance, his father's land. Neither one of them really wanted a relationship with the father, but the father was obsessed with a relationship with his boys. And he was willing to pay any price. And he still is. Our excessive selfishness can have never, ever touch and influence his excessive love and grace. Isn't that marvelous? Well, another mistake that can hurt us ourselves is what I call triumphalism. The idea that God wants me to be happy, and so I'm going to be happy. We're going to move through this thing. I remember hearing on somebody sent me a funny little clip the other day in this huge church somewhere. The minister's wife was speaking to these thousands of people, and she said, God wants us to be happy. And you know, even when we come to church, we don't come to worship God. It's become to get happy, and God loves that. He loves us to be happy. So I'm going to say to you, my brothers and sisters, go out and be happy. Do whatever it takes to be happy, because that makes God happy. And then someone put a clip right behind it where Bill Cosby said, that's the dumbest thing I've heard in my life. Now, he wants us to be joyful. The joy of the Lord is not some sort of hedonistic feelings of well-being. It's what we find in God. And turning to God doesn't necessarily take away our problems either, right? I would actually say when you give your life to Christ and to God, in many ways your life becomes harder. Not because you're the victim of your own sins like we are before that, but we become with Christ the victim of other people's sins. Paul said, if we believe in Christ, we should also suffer for him. Suffer with him. The Hebrew writer would say. Not to go on a cross and pay the penalty for people's sins, but feel God's grief and feel the rejection of trying for people to help people that don't want to be tried out. And the just an enormous pain that we feel to try to bring about some justice in this whole world. But Jesus, in fact, learned obedience by the things that he what? Suffered, Hebrew writer said. When Job was pressed about by Satan, and finally his friends who try to comfort him begin to agree with him that God must let him down. Job said, what? Though he slay me, yet will I serve him. Nadab and Abihu. No, that's not who I want to go. It was Shadrach and Meshach and the Winnebago. They went into the fiery furnace. They went in there and they said, God's going to protect us from the furnace, from the lion. But even if what? Even if he doesn't, we're not going to turn against him. And a lot of times God doesn't do what we really want him to do and what we really think is the right thing to do. Right, Tim? And so we can hurt ourselves by putting ourselves in that mode. Now, some bad health that comes from other people as an attempted encourager or a caregiver. 5 minutes? 10 minutes. First of all, what I call dumb words, okay? Bill Cosby is the dumbest thing I ever heard. Some of these are like that. No, they're really there. It's often offered, I've offered some of myself, an attempt to be empathetic. I literally had people say to me, is there something you're hiding? Yeah, I'm hiding a lot of stuff. I'm still not willing to totally disclose myself to you. I trust God, okay, but I don't trust you that much. But no, I remember being with a man in one of the ladies that had become a Christian at Highland when we first moved there. And basically under the ministry of John Ronald Chalk, who cared for her. She was suffering with cancer, but she was dying and cancer returned. And someone who claimed to have some kind of inside track with God asked her what sin she was doing that kept bringing her back into cancer. And she started drudging around trying to think about something when she had gone to a fortune teller once at the county fair when he was 16 or something. And finally he said, convinced her she had enough faith, he could cast the demons of suffering out of her. And he told me one day he had succeeded in healing her, she was going to be well. He had cast several bedpans full of demons out of her. Yes, the demons of bedpan demons were giving her excruciating pain. But the problem was, a few days later, those demons revisited it. And then she was dying thinking, if I don't have enough faith to be healed, do I have enough faith to be saved? And he had robbed her of everything in the name of help. I had a person come and pray over me and say they had healed me. I was thankful for their concern. But sort of like the lady that spoke yesterday afternoon, I thought, well, maybe if I had believed her fully, either she or I would have come to the point of disillusionment. Because I wasn't healed. I had to go through a lot of chemo after that. I may not be healed yet. Oh, my uncle had that. He died a horrible death. Trying to be sympathetic, you know. But you're really looking bad. I know a lot of you lie when you tell me I'm looking good, but I like that better, all right? You'll be okay. My sister survived that. Well, I'm not your sister, you know. A lot of people, I've survived what a lot of people have died with. You know, I had stage 2B when I was diagnosed. The kind of lung cancer I have, or had, whatever it is, Most people die from it because there are no symptoms until it's too late. A girl I used to date in high school around my same age died around the same time I did, but she didn't know she had this cancer until she was coughing and thought she had pneumonia. And she didn't live very long. But there are people who were gone as far as she was who made it. But there are a lot of people who were diagnosed in the state I was in earlier who didn't. So we have no assurances to give people like that. Here's another one. Well, when someone loses a child, you'll believe I've heard this said. It's okay, honey. You'll be able to have another child. Sometimes I wonder what Job said to the people that said, look, God gave you more children than you had before. If Job was able to say, yeah, those kids didn't amount to much. Job was still saying, but where are my other children? You can't have enough children to take place of the one you lost. I guess God wanted her in heaven more than you wanted her here. Maybe so, but what kind of God is that? Well, some children are just too beautiful for this earth. Then I wish I'd have had a plain child. Have you ever heard some of those? Anybody heard some others that are kind of like this? Him? No? Have you? You would? Okay. As I've always said to me, by the way, because nobody told me I could have another child. But then there's some explanations that don't explain, that make things worse. Answers that make things worse. Oh, I know exactly how you feel. Mm-hmm. You do. Mm-hmm. I'm not very sure of anything, but I'm pretty sure of this. Nobody knows exactly how somebody else feels. If you can prove that they do, okay, I'll say they're acceptance. You don't, I don't know how you feel. You know, everyone has chemotherapy, feels different from another. We react differently to it. Different kinds of chemo, different kinds of body, different stuff, you know, everything. Nobody knows exactly how somebody else feels. And that sort of, that leaves you feeling colder and more lonely because you know they think that, but you know that's not a reality and it makes you feel more alone. And maybe another one would be, well, you know, there's a purpose to everything. God's got a purpose in everything. He did. Okay, knowing that God's got a purpose didn't give me back my child. It doesn't make my chronic pain feel any better. It doesn't reassure me that I'm not going to die. I don't know where God said he had a purpose in everything. That every stupid thing we do was a part of his purpose. Now, he has a purpose to act into, move into, and redeem in everything. God works for good. But it doesn't say God does everything for good. Yeah, 5 minutes. So, let's see, a couple more here. Well, I'll leave some of these maybe for later. Talk to me. What are you hearing? What questions does this prompt here? We've got about 5 minutes.
What do you say to someone who has lost someone or is critical? What do you say?
Well, if you say any, Joe's friends that came to comfort him, they'd have been a whole lot better off if they hadn't said anything. Because everything he said was the wrong thing. My friend David Ray, one time there was a family whose little child, 4-year-old, died was on the way to bring him to the doctor in the car. And of course, we can imagine the trauma. And David and I found out maybe a few minutes afterwards. And we were walking into Henry Hospital, and David Ray said, I would give $100 a word for something to say in there. And then we both concluded that maybe what they needed was us,
yes.
not the words. Joe, the comforter, finally came and sat silently, and that was more valuable. There are things that you can say. I'm so sorry. I love you. I'm here for you. But to try to fix it, you know, and I know that doesn't help, but it's appreciated, but sometimes it defeats its purpose. Someone else? Yes?
I have a son and daughter-in-law who lost twins.
Not twins?
They lost their twins at 20 weeks of pregnancy.
20 weeks,
they
yeah.
They lost them. Uh-huh. And someone came to him and who had been through a similar experience. He didn't say, well, I know how you feel. You know, one thing, our grief, everyone's grief, like you said, everyone is different. So it kind of invalidates your grief for somebody to say,
yes.
Oh, I know how you feel.
Yeah.
You know, or I've been through that.
Yeah.
But what he said I thought was really valuable. He said, Daniel, don't listen to what they say, like when people are trying, try to listen to their hearts.
Yes, this is a wonderful expression. I'll say the question again for her, the comment for the recording. Someone, our daughter lost twins at 20 weeks, and you know people would say things that were inappropriate, but she decided instead of listening to the words, we listened to the heart. That's very good. And you can't say that to someone, okay, I'm listening to your heart, not your words. But we can say to them that we appreciate their presence. I mean, we can say thank you. You know, but we don't need to try to help them see, understand their mistake. That makes everything worse. What I love what you said, though, is that what most anything we do is, in an attempt to fix it, winds up in the person's experience, invalidating their grief. And to tell somebody how long they're supposed to grieve, that's not fair. Some people grieve differently than others. I have a friend that used to teach at Fuller Seminary who lost her father, who wasn't a Christian, and none of the people in her family were Christians. She was a theology professor. And she lived from away from where the family was. And by the time she got there, she had cried out all her tears. And so she was about taking the tasks of the preparation and so forth at the funeral. And her family attacked her for not grieving appropriately. That phony Christianity made you where you don't even love your dad. Well, everybody grieves in their own way. And they didn't know she double grieved because she grieved because she thought he was lost. You know, it's just not fair, is it? And what anybody feels is legitimate. There's no morality or immorality in feelings. There's comfortable and uncomfortable, hurtful and comfortable, but there's no good and bad in the qualitative sense. And it's not fair. Even if you went through something like that and moved through it in a few months, and somebody else has taken a few years, doesn't mean they're weaker or badder than you, right? Or you're better than they are, Howard. Yeah. Well, does that say a quarter when it can? It says it's time to go. Well, let's just end with a little psalm here again. I will extol you, O Lord, for you lifted me out of the depths and did not let my enemies triumph over me. O Lord, my God, I called for you for help and you healed me. You lifted me up out of the grave. You spared me from going down into the pit. Sing to the Lord, you saints of his. Praise his holy name, for his anger lasts only a moment, but his favor lasts a lifetime. When I said, when I felt secure, I said, I will never be shaken. And Lord, when you favored me, you made my heel stand firm. But when you hid your face, I was dismayed. To you, O Lord, I cried. To the Lord I cried for mercy. What gain is there in my destruction? Am I going down into the pit while the grave prays you? Will the dust proclaim your righteousness? Hear, O Lord, and be merciful to me, O Lord. be my help, and you turned my wailing into dancing. And you removed my sackcloth and covered me with joy, that my heart may sing to you and not be silent. Oh Lord my God, I will give you thanks as long as I live. Now hopefully he can bring us through to there. By the way, there are, I think at the back, if you could you take those out right away, just take both folders when you get there, lay the handouts on the table out there. If any of you would like a list of books, I've had some yesterday, they're all taken out, but Caroline's going to place some out there. The one I would especially turn your attention to today, did any of you hear the lady speak yesterday about the darkness? Wonderful message. I read that book a week or two ago, and she was quoting pieces right out of the book yesterday. But that's a very helpful book about how darkness is not all bad. And but there are a number of other books. Max Lucado's book is on this list. I'll get through this. So may go in peace, and may the one who came still come.